top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 331 of the Really Awful Movies Podcast. Night Killer. I'm reminded of one of my favorite poems, The Second Coming by William Butler Yeats. No discussion of a Bruno Mattei film is complete without romantic poetry. What rough beast, its hour come round at last. And this is a pretty rough looking beast. And I got into this movie a few weeks ago because I was I Googled Nightmare on Elm Street ripoffs because I'd heard something about it, and I started watching it, and I caught the first scene with the aerobics workout, and then I put it to bed and thought I'd revisit it, and then I texted you and said, like, we gotta watch this movie. Night Killer is just unbelievably mental.
Well, we gotta talk about that first scene for sure, but I just want to say, before we get too deep into our discussion, this film was made in 1990. Doesn't look it. For some reason, it looks like it's a mid-80s effort.
Oh yeah, it has a certain glossy sheen, but I'm really digging these 1990s Italian efforts. Like, I was thinking of Plankton, which we've referenced on the podcast before, or the what was that thing, the Attack of the Fishmen, or something to that effect. But like, lest you think.
Yeah, no, because in 1990, the horror film industry in Italy was definitely on the wane. So the films that were coming out were definitely very, very unique beasts. So this one was directed by the notorious Claudio Fragasso, best known for Troll 2. And it was also directed, but uncredited, by, as you mentioned earlier, Bruno Mattei. Now, I know with you, there's no love lost with Bruno Mattei.
No, it's funny, and you automatically know going into a film that a bi-directorial feature is splitting artistic vision way too thin, even when it's two people. Movies with two directors are, I want to say, overwhelmingly crap. And when you add the two, Messrs. Fragasso and Mattei together with their combined talents, you're really asking for it.
Mattei,
I think it's a matter of time before we cover, I think, Rats, Night of Terror, or the greatest poster has to be Hell of the Living Dead.
But I got a t-shirt of that one. I bought it at Horrorama a couple years ago. That's such a fun movie.
Oh, for sure. And then Shocking Dark, obviously, is most shocking because they shot a film in Venice and set it underground in one of the most picturesque cities on the planet. It's like shooting a movie in Tokyo and setting it in a park. Absurd. But yeah, like, cool.
Shooting a film in Paris and just using the metro stations.
And then, of course, there's RoboWar, the infamous Predator, just flop and knockoff. I mean, Mattei has been knocking off movies across genres for his whole career. Like, you got to hand it to him.
Mm-hmm. And Fragasso, I mean, this is a man that has nothing but hubris. I mean, he made Troll 2, which many people cite as the worst film ever made. I don't think it's the worst film ever made. It's so entertaining. But, you know, there's definitely a lot of depth to it. And it inspired a really incredible documentary called Best Worst Movie.
I did see that. Yeah, the guy seems rather delusional. Most people go along with their newfound success when snide internet commenters take it to task and they sort of roll with the punches. But he's taking a Tommy Wiseau type approach to his fame. It's really bizarre. Like, he's totally delusional.
What's hilarious about Best Worst Movie, when you watch it, I mean, it's all about the resurgence of Troll 2, you know, with the people who are discovering it, watching it at midnight screenings, watching their friends, interacting, etc., really having fun with this really bad movie. movie. I saw the documentary at the Hot Dogs Festival here in Toronto. Fragasso wasn't there, I wish he was. But the funny thing is, as these films began reprogrammed as midnight screenings, Fragasso thought, oh, finally my work of genius has been rediscovered. I'm going to go to these screenings and I'm just going to bask in the adulation of my adoring public. Meanwhile, what he didn't realize was that they were coming to laugh not with the movie, but at the movie. And you could just see Fragasso get more and more and more angry and confrontational as the documentary goes on. It's absolutely hilarious. The only one that doesn't realize what a piece of shite Troll 2 is.
I think with his hubris, only maybe Uwe Boll can maybe match it, because this guy, I mean, I don't know. Do you want to chalk this up to ambition? It's totally mystifying. I mean, plot-wise, you have, like,
are we talking about Night Killer now?
Night Killer, yeah, because it's just, I think you got to almost credit him for making something so mind-altering and fever-dreamish that it was almost hard to follow. So you got to give him credit where it's due. Does that deserve credit? I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, the reason why it's hard to follow is because it really is two movies in one. Fragasso wanted to make a, quote, hence psychological thriller, which is way out of Fragasso's wheelhouse. And producers, when they saw this quote-unquote tense psychological thriller, they said, no, we have to get some more gore in there. So they hired Bruno Mattei and said, listen, we're not going to credit you, but I want you to shoot a bunch of scenes with murders and gore, etc. And turn it into the movie. So what we have here is two movies in one with a very sort of tenuous connection between the two.
I almost liken it a bit to Brian De Palma for retards. I mean, you're not supposed to say that, but it has all the hallmarks.
Brian De Palma for mentally challenged.
And it is really quite amazing because, like, at the outset of this show, I dismissed this or maybe alluded to this as a Nightmare on Elm Street ripoff, which is, I think, really overstated because, if anything, it's more of a Klaus Kinski as the walking undead Dracula, and more of a maybe a Max Schreck type take on it. I don't really see much. I mean, sure, he's got these sort of pathetic rubber prosthetic fingernails that don't even scratch, but I mean, that's really the only thing that likens it to Nightmare in any way.
And he never really uses those fingernails to murder anybody, does he?
Well, it depends. I mean, he does insert, I guess, his extremities through the bowels of his victims, but it almost seems like the fingernails would be a hindrance more than a help.
Mm. Well, when this film began, I had to do a double take. I mean, first of all, the look of the film is so pathetic. It looks like it's shot on Super 8. And then we're just thrown right into the maelstrom. I mean, there's no establishing shots. There's no credits. We're just right into the crud. And we have this rehearsal for this dance performance, which is got to be one of the worst things. I mean, Nightmare City, an aerobic dance routine.
Well, I'm glad you brought
it. Here on Tudor Rogers compared to this thing. I mean, this was the most unsynchronized dancers I'd ever seen in my life. And at one point, Chris, back me up on this, were they not doing the Running Man?
I think it was off-putting in a way that could only be put off Broadway. But to their credit, the dance, I guess, choreographer was yelling at them for their shoddy work repeatedly. So I think they had Well, yeah, their movements were really asynchronous, and it made you wonder. Like, it established a really strange tone overall, because these guys are very, very far removed from putting together anything of quality that's audience ready. That's for sure. And that's, I guess it's one or two members of the dance troupe, and I think the choreographer herself, who is unconvincingly launched off the balcony in this shabby theater. And it's just, it's one of those, like, SCTV comedy sketch bodies that just, you know, falls right off the... That was absolutely unbelievable and totally unnecessary, too, because, I mean, the killer's M.O., Klaus Kinski-esque killer is to shove a fist through the bowel. So there's no point to throw the body off. They didn't even show the body land, which would have been impactful if maybe it splattered with viscera all over the place like Fulci. No, they just did a cutaway, and that was it. It was like, my God.
And we should say also, I mean, the look of the killer, I mean, I guess that's why people do sort of liken this to being a Nightmare on Elm Street ripoff, just because he vaguely resembles Freddy Krueger. Freddy Krueger was green and looked like he was dipped in toxic waste. Actually, you texted to me, Toxie Freddy.
Oh, and yes, yeah. Oh,
for sure, this guy's exactly spot on. I mean, this is the Toxic Avenger, and he made it with Freddy Krueger. We should say, too, that it's all small. I guess it's a mild spoiler, but it's a mask. It's not his natural visage.
No, and the mask, which, I mean, is something right out of the bar in Star Wars, really, but it does come to prominence in the fantastic denouement as well. But, like, really, the whole film revolves around, I guess, this killer's inability to capture the final girl, or the protagonist, who viewers will note is a genre favorite. I believe she was in Silent Night, Deadly Night, and maybe, I think, Dynasty as well. She's been in a bunch of just crap productions. So I forget the actress's name, but I mean, you know, she's, you know, obviously very comely, and her willingness to drop her clothes, no doubt, helped the efforts to get her cast for this.
Well, she was not the only female in this movie that had a willingness to doff her top. There was quite a bit of nudity contained therein.
Oh, yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned Nightmare Beach earlier, because this has a similar glossy look, although I'm much more enamored by the Umberto Lenzi production. It's one of my, you know, it's got to be up there in my top 30 favorite horror movies of all time. It's so much fun, but it has that glossy, chintzy, cheap, kind of colorful look to it. It's just so at odds with the subject matter.
Actually, more than one time, the mise-en-scene reminded me very much of soap opera. It definitely had a very bold and beautiful look to it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, of course. I think I've had Zoom calls that are a little higher quality production. But, yeah, this is just, it's also, I think, an example of really, really guerrilla filmmaking at its finest, because they have shots of hospitals in Virginia Beach and the police, and they seem to have gotten away with all manner of shit. And I don't know why they set it particularly in Virginia Beach. I mean, you'd think that would be more of a setting, like a solar type setting, but not at all, right? I mean, this is a night killer that doesn't do any of his butchering after dark. But I mean, that's just par for the course, really, with all these, how these things are titled. I mean, it was called, I think, Don't Open the Door 3, Non Aprite Quella Porta 3. And then there's also references to, I think, there was a cash-in on Texas Chainsaw Massacre, even though it's like five states over.
I forget what it was originally called. You said Don't Open the Door, right?
Yeah, I think so, but I mean,
when they released Texas Chainsaw Massacre in Italy, they released it as Don't Open the Door. Okay, so it's kind of like Zombie 2, which was the Italian de facto sequel to Dawn of the Dead. In this case, you have a de facto sequel to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which does not take place in Texas. Nary a chainsaw to be found. Has nothing to do with Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Has nothing to do with Nightmare on Elm Street. And yet, people are likening this to a Nightmare on Elm Street ripoff, or something that's very tenuously connected to Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Speaking of lauded horror franchises, you can't forget Dr. Willow, the kind of elderly Freudian exemplar and Loomis knockoff, whose pronouncements are just off the charts as well, and who works closer with the police to catch this guy than you would ever expect from some attendant psychiatrist. And he basically, like, just spews forth just a litany of psychoanalysis cliches, but he's just basically, like, he's just such a perfect Loomis. You got to have a Loomis.
Yeah, and also, I mean, another part of our killer's MO is that he likes to make crank calls. So there you have, your screams, your...
Don't answer the phone. you got to love Don't Answer the Phone. Oh, yeah. And, and Black Christmas, of course. But, yeah, the phone and maybe bells, murder by phone. But I was going to say before, I mean, Don't Open the Door, that has to be the most generic horror title. That could really work for any movie that's not set in space. And even then, you wouldn't open the door, because it would be a hatch lock into space. But that is the most generic title ever.
By the fourth installment, it would be called Don't Open the Door in Space.
And
where movies go when they get to about the fourth on.
And this Melanie Beck, I mean, she cuts an almost, I would say, Linda Hamilton, Melania Trump kind of figure. And for some reason, she has two phone lines leading to her house. And when she's reporting to the Virginia Beach PD that she's getting these harassing phone calls, the attendant detective actually has to take down, I guess, two fake 555 movie numbers for this woman. I mean, how popular is she? Is she running like a phone sex line on the side? I thought that was just mystifying.
And of course, the call is coming from the house.
It always is. And it's an urban legend that's just been completely ruined by a cell phone technology, really, right? Or maybe not. I don't even know. Yeah, I suppose they could do that. They could just ping the phone, like the cops could ping it, and then they could just say, hey, it's coming from inside the house. But presumably at that point, you'd hear it. I mean, I never wasn't really into that. It's coming from the house. I mean, geez, unless you have the music blasting or you're watching some sort of high-volume movie, you would hear someone else on the phone, but we digress.
Yeah, even if you were downstairs and somebody was upstairs, I mean, you would hear something, so yeah.
Especially in my 500-square-foot dodgy apartment.
Well, without a doubt. Mine's not that much bigger than yours.
Is that a book plug in there?
As it was coming out of my mouth, I was like, yeah, that's kind of a book club. Mine's bigger than yours. Yeah. 100 wackiest action movies now available on Amazon and any your favorite online retailers.
Yeah, and in-store too in the UK. I think W.H. Smith, the Waterstones, and a bunch of others. But yeah, I wonder if this is the point in the show where we should segue into what we've learned, because there's a lot to learn in this movie, that's for sure.
Okay, you want to begin?
Sure, well, I think it was Fragasso who put pen to paper for this Aaron Sorkin-esque exploration. But I mean, you can attribute some of the malapropisms to his just inability to write any kind of dialogue. But one of my favorites is the police are groping in the dark. Now, groping is a transitive verb; it requires an object, right? So I think what he meant to say is police are fumbling in the dark because they can't find the killer. Yeah, and you're groping. You got to be groping someone, like your POTUS
or something.
Yeah, like sure, or yeah. Steven Seagal or somebody allegedly. But yeah, I thought that was just it made me laugh out loud. There's so many just bizarro scenes, and not to mention mise en scène with one of the I guess the protector of and the de facto boyfriend of this Melanie Beck, who is really into fried chicken. And I don't know whether this was a product placement. Like that is bewildering KFC just enjoyment right there.
I'm going to say, never, ever in my life did I think I'd ever see a film where you have a woman with a gun to her head face-to-face with a guy eating a KFC drumstick. I mean, that's one for the ages. That's something that I could put up there, you know, like bucket list, cross it off. Face-to-face with a guy eating a greasy, disgusting, artery-clogging KFC drumstick.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, KFC bucket indeed. That's quite the list. But yeah, it's just they try and, I guess, shoehorn in all these subplots, and they have, I guess, the woman gets kidnapped by someone who maybe, and we can spoil it a little bit, is not the actual antagonist, but is someone else who's obsessed with her. So they try and lead you down a garden path with this kidnapping subplot, and there's allusions to Beck as having suicidal tendencies and having taken a bunch of pills. The only remedy for which is dunking her head in the Atlantic Ocean in order to get her to cough them up. Like, it's so bewildering. Like,
obviously, isn't that what they teach you in your first year of medical school?
Oh, I thought this...
the Atlantic Ocean, not the Pacific. It's the Atlantic Ocean.
It's this very specific pH level it has, yeah. But you get this bizarro scene where this woman is putting down like a beach towel, and then this love interest comes chasing her down, and it's they're making this up as they went along, because you don't see any that I recall. I mean, there are allusions to her mental breakdown and her suffering at the hands of this killer that's stalking her, but I don't think she's, you know, what is it? She guzzled a bunch of wine and some pills. I didn't even see that happening. The whole thing made me woozy.
Yeah, definitely. You need a bit of Dramamine as you're watching this thing.
Yeah, I don't even know whether it's like, this is more Nightmare Beach, I think, than Nightmare City, but it definitely has nightmarish aspects to it, and it has Just, it's an incredible tour de force. What can you say? It's a psychological thriller. At least it was purported to be an erstwhile psychological thriller that was distinct steamrolled and railroaded by some ad hoc desire to throw in a bunch of ridiculous violence that really lends
little more scenes. Yeah, no, it's a psychological thriller with nothing psychological about it and no thrills.
And there's also some mysterious, while we're on the issue of what we learned, I guess, when there's a woman, a young girl, and when her mother is a purported victim of what they dub the masked maniac, I think they call him, and I think Melanie and her boyfriend take over custody of the girl when her mother goes missing. It's like not a family member, not a grandparent, not an uncle, not an aunt, no, just some random victim. And I got to say, as a journalist, I really, really dug the amazing, amazing scrum scenes with the journalist just mobbing the cops, and there's this black guy who's straight out of a 70s exploitation film who works together with the Loomis knockoff to finally, help the residents of Virginia Beach escape this thing's clutches. But that was really bizarre. There's even a scene where I think a producer holds the journalist mic for her during her stand-up, and you see the producer standing there holding the mic out. It's almost like he's socially distancing 40 years ahead of his time. There's so many things bewildering about this movie. I don't know.
Well, for sure. And another thing is bewildering, and I'm going to chalk this up to something I learned. The nom de plume. I mean, it's not uncommon when you have an Italian movie released stateside for the director's name to be anglicized. So, for example, Lucio Fulci became Louis Fuller. Lumberto Bava was Louis Coates. Those are pretty cool names.
Yeah.
Here we have Claudio Fragasso, poor Claudio, as Clyde Anderson.
Yeah.
What kind of a name is Clyde Anderson? It sounds like a guy that'd be selling funeral insurance or something. A guy helming a horror flick.
Well, I think Clive Anderson was the original host of Whose Line Is It Anyway, and a popular British TV personality, but Clyde, I have no idea. Yeah, it just sounds like some guy who does the convention circuit selling timeshares or something.
Not enough people nowadays are named Clyde, if you ask me.
No, Bonnie and Clyde. But was this a thief of your time? What do you think star rating was?
Oh, my God. I mean, objectively, I would have to say, if I was a real critic, I would say this is a half-star film, but for sheer what-the-fuck entertainment value and sort of like loony, wacky, wild cinema, I'm going to be giving this one 2.5 stars.
I learned actually another thing. I was going to concur and give it maybe 2.5, maybe 2.75, but I mean, I'm no serial phone stalker, but if I were, I would probably, in the 90s, not pick a phone booth that was immediately across the street from my intended target. I mean, this is pretty basic stalker creeper 101, is it not? Because Melanie was basically opening her blinds, peering out the window, and basically getting like a perfectly good bird's eye view of the guy who's stalking her. It's just unbelievable. At least pick like a gas station like a couple kilometers over.
I forgot about that, but that was true. It's hilarious. He was right outside her door. Figure out how convenient that she had a phone booth right across the street from her abode.
We forget, those of us who grew up prior to the age of the ubiquitous cell phone, just how gross and disgusting those boxes were. I mean, it's just absolutely vile. And people would put like peanut butter and there'd be puke on some of them. It's just, oh my God. I'm sure that spawned many a pandemic in its own right, to the advent of those phones. Although we do encourage listeners to check out Murder by Phone, which is a very, very funny and ridiculous Canadian tax shelter movie where a disgruntled phone company telecom worker starts killing people remotely via some kind of contraption, right?
I said, aren't they all?
Yeah, I feel bad saying that about postal workers because they're behaving quite heroically under the current circumstances, and and there have been outbreaks amongst the posties, and they're doing really fine work. But yeah, Bell's Murder by Phone, one of the great phone-themed movies. I actually did a list for Daily Dead about the phone in popular horror, and I think I can be excused by this being very unpopular that it didn't merit a mention on my list, but this movie has a sort of an underground cult appeal, as you can't help but credit, I mean, this, you know, the Lennon and McCartney directorial team of Fragasso and Mattei. I mean, you can't top that.
No. When it comes to crap cinema, you're right. Fragasso and Mattei are up there with Jagger, Richards, or Lennon and McCartney for sure. Absolutely.
And the denouement is just so mystifying, and so I think it's just I guess some sort of cheap ploy to infuse this with a bunch of highfalutin Freudian castration anxiety identification stuff. I mean, the stuff with the daughter and the mother, I was totally just flabbergasted by that, and it made no sense how they, although I think it opened the door. Rather than shutting it, as the title would suggest, on an actual sequel, right? I mean, that's the last scene really opens itself up.
Actually, it was somewhat of a Fulci-esque ending. It was somewhat reminiscent of House by the Cemetery. Maybe not. I don't know.
Well, considering they really invested so little in the daughter character, it makes just zero sense that all of a sudden she would, and, you know, again, minor spoiler here, carry on the legacy of this creature who, I guess, was her, I don't know, is this a Maury Povich moment? Like, is the creature the father? I don't even know what was going on. Honestly, this is going to require multiple viewings. This is like Chinatown or some of Orson Welles' finest work.
Now or something.
Was there a rose?
The now of Italian horror, because it's just one big apocalypse.
Well, I really was genuinely confused by a lot of points here. So, and I guess you watched it, I guess, too. I have no excuse. I mean, you at least watched it on a Sunday. I watched it 2 days ago, and I'm still just as mystified as ever. I don't know. But hopefully, you know, listeners can check it out for themselves and continue to enjoy the Really Awful Movies podcast. New episodes of which are uploaded for your listening pleasure on Fridays. Night Killer, yeah. No, nothing happening at night. A masked maniac. Usually, with these sort of protruding, reptilian kind of teeth and these kind of iguana-esque protruding talons. But to what end? I mean, it just seems such a cheap... And it was frequently, I guess, thrown around too. I mean, this disguise and get up ends up in a box, ends up in thrown on a chair. It's just the killer is so, I guess.
With his disguise.
Yeah, it's not like Michael Myers and the import placed on the William Shatner mask. But yeah, this was a throwaway character and a throwaway mask and a bit of a throwaway production. But I enjoyed it immensely.
Cool. Yeah, same here. Don't let our 2.5-star rating stop you from enjoying this one.
And definitely enjoy Plankton and all the other 90s. I mean, it's almost an eventuality that we're going to tackle some of the demon sequels, right? Like, how many of them are there? 3, 4, 5?
Well, if you're talking about official sequels, there's really only one. But as when you talk about unofficial sequels, yeah, there's numerous.
Because that's come across my radar several times. So I'm thinking we got to get more into 90s horror when... Argento's creative powers were starting to wilt, and the genre was falling off the cliff. But that's just the way we like it in many respects.
And speaking of which, we should also look at some of the zombie sequels. So Zombie 3, Zombie 4, I believe Zombie 5, Killer Birds, I think it's called, either 4 or 5. Yeah, we're definitely going to have to delve into those ones too.
Well, thanks for listening, and... we'll tackle a whole bunch of genres going forward, and we're going to hit some more action films as well. And we shall talk to you soon.
Take care.
Thank you.